You're listening to America in the Now with your host, Henry Roman. Welcome, welcome, welcome to another installment of the America in the Now show, weekly show with your host, Henry Roman. I cannot tell you how glad I am to be here. Ooh, wow, it feels like it's been a couple of weeks. There was New Year's Day, and unfortunately, I was at home. There was an illness, which I'm still trying to recover from. There have been one kind of in Spanish, it's called contratiempo, one delay after another that has stopped me from coming to the show. But I am here today, and I am going to be here forever, or at least throughout the rest of the year. I can't tell you how much fun it is to do this show. I'm grateful to God that I've been given this opportunity to every week be able to share with you what my thoughts are. Now, I like to say that my public words are many people's private thoughts. I was at a party on Saturday, So it was Sunday. And I'm sitting there, we're watching the game. The Kansas City Chiefs have their victory. And during the show, you know, I try very hard not to talk about politics with at parties, just because, you know, you never know who really is, you know, politically aware and who really wants to talk about this stuff or not. And so, you know, I want to be respectful of people who don't share my thoughts, who don't feel the way I do. But when people, you know, when people ask me questions, I feel, hey, you know what? If they're asking me questions, it's because they want to know what I think. And so that was the case. That was the case this Sunday, where I had people, you know, asking me about my thoughts, politically and otherwise. And I'm not one to shy away from my political thoughts. And so I was asked a lot of questions about what are my thoughts about the impeachment or the impeachment trial in the Senate. What are my thoughts about Trump's foreign policies? I mean, it was about 12 people that were in the living room watching the show, and all of a sudden, the football game became secondary to people asking me questions. And what I found interesting is that not one person said, you know, Henry, I don't agree with you. I don't agree with what you're saying. Not one person was offended by my comments. Not one person really had anything to say besides, I agree with everything that you say, Henry. Now, was it an ego boost to hear people say that they agree with me 100% with what I say? Yes. But here's something that someone told me. And when they said this, a lot of other people's heads nodded. One of them was saying, Henry, I'm so glad that you can say what you're saying and that you have the ability to say it, because the things that you're saying are the things that I think, but I don't dare say out loud. And this is the part that, for me, I attribute that to political correctness. When someone cannot speak their mind because they're afraid of either being ridiculed, being scorned, or worse, perhaps have negative effects in their careers and in their livelihoods, that's when political correctness has gone too far. Now, perhaps that was the case in the 1970s in Boston. You know, if you were like supportive of public busing, most of your neighbors, especially if you lived in South Boston, obviously they did not support public busing. I could see how perhaps the pendulum has swung the other way. But even then, there were people who believed in civil rights and were willing to speak out. And perhaps people would kind of maybe roll their eyes at you or disagree with you. But people were not out to destroy you like people are out to destroy you now if you happen to dare have an opinion that's opposite than this one. This is the part that really upsets me. Freedom of speech. I see that my Facebook heckler is live and online. I'm going to invite him to come online here in about, I'd say about half an hour or so. So Marcus, get ready. I believe in freedom of speech. I believe that everyone is entitled to speak their mind. It is a right that is guaranteed in the Constitution. It is something that it's enshrined, freedom of speech, freedom of the press, freedom of religion, the right to peacefully assemble and address the government for redress of wrongs. The exercise that took place in Virginia, I'm sure there were a lot of people that wanted this thing to go really to hell in a handbasket. I'm sure that there were people who really much wanted a bunch of just uneducated rednecks to be waving the Confederate flag and yelling, "Yeehaw! Oh, I want my right. I want to shoot my guns, and I want to be on top because I'm white, and I want to take care. I want to rule the world like I used to." That's what people were expecting. They were expecting a bunch of ignorant, big old fat white rednecks to be waving Confederate flags and to be spouting racist diatribes. You know, just perfect material for the left, you know, for the left-wing media to digest and to broadcast and say, you see, this is what we're fighting. This is why we want to protect regular, intelligent Americans from these ignorant people, these gung-toting people who are ignorant and racist. None of it. Not one incident. There was one arrest of a woman who was wearing a mask. I don't know what her deal was. But of the 30,000 people that went to Virginia and peacefully assembled to address the government for redress of wrongs, of those 30,000 people, over half of them were heavily armed. Not just armed, concealed carry. There were many carrying AR-15 type weapons. There was even a picture of a guy sporting a 5-foot-long sniper, a 50-caliber sniper rifle. It was an impressive piece of hardware. I was impressed. There are people dressed in, you know, in what I call tactical gear. You know, they were dressed in camis and camo gear, and they had lots of ammunition. I mean, you know, part of this, I understand that culture. Do I agree with it? Do I disagree with it? It doesn't matter whether I agree with it or not. Am I going to be one of those guys walking around with, camouflage gear and sporting, you know, military hardware and lugging around, an 8-pound or 15-pound AR-15 along with ammo? Yeah, I'm not going to be that guy. It's just not who I was. I was going to go to Virginia, but I was going to go in a sport coat, just like I am now, and a hat. I was going to be there. But because I've got still this lingering sickness, I thought, you know, better for me to stay close to home, take care of myself, get better, and then I can protest, you know, with renewed vigor and in earnest, rather than kind of risk my health. Anyway, I'll be right back. You're listening to America in the Now with your host, Henry Roman. This is how the Democrats feel. Oh, my goodness. If I were a Democrat that was in charge of the impeachment process, I would be in such a funk right now. It seems like everything that they've tried to do to get this president taken out of office, despite the will of 63 million Americans who voted him into office, they must be so very depressed. First of all, they tried to do the Russian collusion thing. $40 million in what, almost 2 years later, they got a big, fat nothing for their efforts. So then someone else got the bright idea of, well, Why don't we do we can do an impeachment. Why don't we do an impeachment? Yeah, it'll be fun. We'll impeach him. We'll remove him from office. Everything will be fun, and everybody will be happy, and flowers will bloom again in Washington, D.C., and people will be singing, and there'll be choruses of hallelujah. Oh, and you can't do that because that's religion. There'll be choruses of, how the humanity, I don't know. I can't think of anything right now. It'll be the age of Aquarius, and we can start limiting people's gun rights and limiting their rights, and people will be so happy because the government will provide everything. But first, we got to get rid of this man. Now, President Trump said something that I thought was very smart. He said, the government, the left, is not after me. They're after you. I just happen to be in the way. I thought that was pretty darn smart. That's exactly right. My friends, we have lived in an age of incredible prosperity. We enjoy freedoms that are the envy of other countries. But you have to understand something. You have to understand that the goal of political parties is to obtain power. There is no such thing as a status quo. There is always that yearning for greater power, greater influence. That is the role of political parties, left and right, by the way. The only thing that stands between despotism and absolute rule of the government is people. And in the United States of America, the only thing that stops government from becoming despotic is a very well-armed militia. You betcha, I said it. The thing that stops the government from overreaching and taking our liberties is the fact that if there are, how much do they say? If there are 320 million Americans, one moment, there are probably that many guns in this country. They say that the average gun owner owns about 10 to 20 weapons. For people who don't own not even one gun, they must be absolutely just beside themselves saying, what, you know, how can one person own that many guns? What do they need that many guns for? You only need one gun. Well, guess what? No, that's not true. You don't only need one gun. Now, I'm speaking as someone who supports the Second Amendment, but whether I choose to actively be a carrier of a weapon, that's between me and God. I frown on people that carry weapons and have not trained and have not prepared and don't understand the incredible responsibility of having, you know, what having a weapon means. It is a grave responsibility to carry a weapon. And so you've got, you know, let's say 63 million Americans, probably more than that, about 70 to 80 million Americans either have one gun or have access to weapons. And it has been those people, whether you choose to believe that or not, it has been those people that have kept the government in check. There have been instances where the government has overreached. And there have been instances where the government was about to overreach and they were stopped cold. And it seems like this happened a lot during Democratic administrations where a militarized law enforcement arm overreaches their mandate and try to run roughshod over the rights of individuals. You know, it's very easy for the federal government to run roughshod over the rights of individuals. But when the individuals unite and when the individuals resist as a united front, all of a sudden, the best efforts of the government are for naught. Because again, you may have a standing army of 2.5 million people. But that standing army of 2.5 million people are not going to take arms against their brothers and their sisters, of which approximately there are 70 million of us who are firm believers in our Second Amendment rights. That's a staggering number when you think about it. But these are the people that are guaranteeing our rights and our freedoms and are stopping the government from overreaching. I commend the patriots who went to Virginia yesterday, who stood in the cold from 8 in the morning to about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, who, through a visible presence, told the government of Virginia, and by extension, the government of the United States, we will not allow the government to strip us of our rights. Because when you start to strip us of any of our rights, all of our rights are in jeopardy. And I, for one, am a freedom-loving American. I fought, I served in this country, I served in the U.S. military for 6 years. I put my life on the line on several occasions. I did it because I believe in the system. Had I had to give up my life for my country, I would have done it. And I would not have hesitated. Because it was more important that I sacrifice myself so that others can have rights. I've got a call. I'm going to go ahead and take that call. Hello, this is WARA AM 1320 with your host, Henry Roman. Whom am I speaking with? What's your first name?
Marcus.
Marcus. Happy New Year, my brother.
Happy New Year.
Good to hear your voice.
The airwaves were not the same without you last week.
Thank you. Yeah, I tried to rally, but I was feeling so ill. I decided the better part of valor sometimes is to hunker down and just get better rather than coming out and making things worse. But thank you. I appreciate your kind thoughts.
Yes. So I'm about to say something controversial, so all of my fans, all of my haters, call the show, 508-222-1320.
What else is new?
I'm going to say something controversial. Henry and I agree.
On what?
Henry and I agree on some basic things. Yes, freedom of speech is important. Yes, the Second Amendment gives you the right to bear arms. That is, without a question, a fundamental right of all Americans, and that's all I'm going to say about that. So you and I agree on that, Henry. And while I sit there and I look at the coverage, I'm actually glad there were no incidents in Virginia, because, again, it's not about going there and looking for trouble if people are going to peacefully assemble. Having said that, I remember that this has also been tried by people of color, and usually the results don't work as well. So
I have to grant you that.
I want people to really think about this from this standpoint, is that if you had 1,000 armed people of color descend on a capital city, would it go down peacefully if it was open carry? Or would something else happen? What would happen if you had 1,000 people of Middle Eastern descent who are American, dressed in traditional garb and open carrying? What if they descended on the Capitol? What would happen?
Well, hold on. I think I do need. I would like to respond to that. Can you hear me?
Okay. Absolutely, respond to that.
Yeah, I do want to kind of respond to that, because one of the things that the mass media didn't show, but I was able to see because I have the Breitbart feed, call it whatever you want to, the Breitbart video feed. The guys went around and were kind of talking with people. And what I saw is I saw a very diverse group of people. Now, granted, the majority were white, right? I mean, that's going to happen in these kinds of events. But there was a very healthy sprinkling of black, of Asian, and what I probably look like, either Hispanic or probably Middle Eastern looking dudes. I mean, some of my favorite video feeds are from these two guys. They're called the Colored Conservatives. They're Middle Easterners, and I think one of them is a practicing Muslim. And what they try to do is they try to let people see that, you know, Republicanism is not about being a certain color. It's about an ideology. It's about, I mean, these are the things that I pontificate and sometimes I scream about. It's about having a mindset about freedom. I don't need the government to take care of me. I don't need programs to take care of me, to coddle me. What I need is freedom. I need the opportunity to succeed. I mean, and there's a lot more to it. So I think what you saw yesterday in Virginia was a group of people that were petitioning, they were exercising their First Amendment right, and many of them were openly carrying. They were exercising their Second Amendment right, and if you heard the opening segment of the show, I mean, you know, would I be one of those guys? Even if I carried, man, I would not be one of those dudes wearing tactical gear, you know, bulletproof vests, multiple, magazines, you know, carrying the AR-15 tricked out to the max with multiple scopes and I mean, for me, it's kind of like a hobby thing. These people really, this is more like a hobby. They're serious about, you know, their gun rights. I get it. Would I be one of those guys? No. But do I support those guys? Yes, because it has been people like that give governments pause when it's time for them to start limiting our freedoms. So I don't know. I saw America when I saw the Second Amendment. Now, had it been, you know, because we've had a million man march in D.C., that was mostly men of color, and that was a peaceful event. I mean, I would love to see more of that. I would love to see more events where there are Americans of all colors and say this is not, you know, this party represents me. And I'm going to say something, because you said something earlier. I'm going to say something too that may be a little bit, some of my conservative Republican friends may not like what I'm going to say, but I'm going to say this too. I think the Republican Party has to do a much better job of reaching out to communities of color. If they really want to represent me, they need to speak more clearly about issues that affect me and affect people of my ethnicity, i.e. Latinos. They're afraid to talk about immigration. They're afraid to talk about a path to citizenship for people that have been, you know, that were brought to this country as children and really have no other place. Now, I believe that the left has done a damn good job of indoctrinating these little social justice warriors. I don't like that, but I still think that there are a bunch of these kids that are patriotic. They want the opportunity to show that they are patriots. What they need is that they need a mechanism to earn their way. And I'll be darned if I want a program to give them anything, because when you give people something, it has no freaking value. And I'm starting to get mad because I'm going off on a little bit of a tangent. But give people the opportunity to earn their citizenship so that they can cherish it. When you just give it to them, it has no value, man. Go ahead.
That may be the case. And you and I have, again, we agree. We agree. If you are a member, if you're leading the Republican Party, listen to me. You got to do more to reach out to communities of color if you want the vote. But I would be negligent if I didn't end with this.
Hey, can you hold for a minute? You know what? I got to take this break because I get in trouble when I'm my break.
Don't get in trouble with the sponsors.
Stay with me though. I want you to finish your idea. All right, we'll be right back. You're listening to America in the Now with your host, Henry Roman, and I got my special guest, Marcus.
What the heck? What we really truly is truth and reconciliation.
In addition to per diem opportunities, Amigo offers first, second, and third shift availability to help fit your needs and theirs. When you join Amigo, you will help to create a positive client experience for all the individuals we have the privilege of serving on a daily basis. For more information on all positions available, please call 508-455-6200 or visit our website at AmigoInc.org.
You're listening to America the Now with your host, Henry Roman. I was going to play a song, but I can't seem to get it to go. It probably will start playing soon. All right, we are on the air. We've been speaking with Marcus regarding some of his ideas. He always surprises me because just when I think I'm getting ready to, you know, I'm getting ready to fight him, he disarms me with what he says. But I think that I really truly believe that people who think long and hard about politics and political issues and social issues and how it affects societies, it inevitably have a kind of a coming to mind about things, and there are things that people are going to agree with, and there are things that people are not going to agree with. But it seems to me like when I have these rapid just discussions with people that are on the left, they're patronizing, that they're not willing to listen to me. All they're doing is kind of waiting for their turn to either insult me or to make some kind of trite comment to provoke me. And many times they're successful. But when two intelligent people sit down and have a conversation, there's going to be things that they're going to agree with, and there are going to be things that they don't agree with. So I guess in some things we agree with, in other things we don't. I know that Virginia, what they're trying to do is they're trying to limit the gun rights of people. And so I there are two schools of thoughts when it comes to gun rights. Let's talk about that for a minute, since you said you agree with me. There are some people who say that you know, gun rights should be totally unrestricted because that's what the Second Amendment says, you know, the rights of the oh my goodness, I forget exactly what it says, but the right to bear arms shall not be infringed, period, end of story. So if you want to carry a rocket launcher, you know, you should be able to carry one. What Virginia's trying to do is they're trying to institute limits. They're trying to institute red flag limitations where because of different reasons, people can confiscate your guns. That kind of stuff really scares me. Limitations on how many guns you can buy to one a month. It's as if, you know, I mean, I've heard people say, you know, you should only have one gun. I have friends that have, I mean, they show me the pictures, and it's kind of scary how many guns they've got. I mean, they've gone, in my opinion, they've gone into crazy land because they've got, you know, AR-15s, they've got shotguns, they've got long guns, they've got short guns. I mean, they've got handguns, they've different calibers, and they're proud of their weapons, and they love to show their pictures. I can understand how people can have different weapons for different needs. You know, do you need 100 guns? No. Do you need 50 guns? Probably not. You know, could you use, you know, if people collect guns and they have 10, 15 guns, and they buy one gun this month, and then maybe next month they buy another gun, you know, 3 weeks later because they got a great deal. The limitations, when the government starts to act limitations on rights, it's a slippery slope. And that's how I feel about that, Marcus. It makes me very, very nervous when legislative bodies start enacting limits, because when does it stop?
It's a great question. And here's again, I'm going to surprise you here. I agree with you. But I think we're... There has to be a distinction, and again, this is where I think we talk about some, you know, just having some sensibility in this and really sitting down and discussing as intelligent people. Sensible laws, right? Again, if you have a history of mental health problems, should you have a gun?
No, I don't believe so.
Right? So I think we have to look at it and just say, look, the founding fathers, highly intelligent men, right? Can't really, but there are some things they got wrong. And it's okay to admit that they got some things wrong. It's okay for us to take a look and update language as it needs to be updated. For example, I can't believe I'm about to say this. Get recorded. The president actually got some things right. NAFTA didn't deal with digital currency. It didn't have anything to do with digital trade. So you got to update. You got to go along with the times. And I think in this respect, as it comes to the amendments and your rights, yes, you know, you want them to be as free as possible. But if everybody is walking around carrying, you know, rocket launchers and RPGs, then what is America, right?
A polite society, I'll tell you that.
right? It's given how freely, and I think it's really not so much the fact that we have arms, it's just we have such an overabundance of arms that makes it a very slippery slope. And, you know, do you need, like, again, if you're a collector and you want to collect guns, I got no problem with it. But you have to remember that each one of those weapons in the wrong hands can be deadly.
I agree with you. I believe that responsible gun owners, and I know a lot of responsible gun owners. It seems like for some reason, just having this NRA hat, all of a sudden everybody wants to talk to me about guns. And even though I'm not that I'm shy around guns, but I'd rather, you know, not people not be kind of brandishing their weapons around me. I don't consider that cool. But I still feel that I lost my train of thought here. The fact that people want to have guns, if they're responsible, I got it back. If they're responsible about how they secure their weapons, if they're responsible about how they maintain their weapons, if they're especially responsible about how they, you know, how they're trained to use their weapons, I'm all for it. What I don't want is I don't want a lackadaisical attitude about, you know, weapons and some guy, you know, going to a McDonald's, and when he reaches for his wallet, you know, he drops his .45 and it goes off because he doesn't know how to properly, you know, secure a drop safe weapon. That's the kind of stuff that quite frankly it scares me. But it really hasn't happened. I mean, New Hampshire and Maine are both open carry states. You can walk around, you know, you can go into a McDonald's and the guy next to you is probably shouldering an AR-15. I don't think they do that, but I mean, technically they can do that. But you don't hear about any incidents where, you know, people have accidental discharges. So I do believe that organizations such as the NRA have a responsibility to train people in the responsible, you know, the responsible stewardship of weapons. That's the way I see it. You know, it's not a question of owning guns. It's a question of being a steward of a weapon. The events in was it Florida? My goodness, I already forgot the state it was in Texas, where some crazy man, simply because he had been refused money. This was obviously a man who had mental issues. I don't know how he got his gun. But he was able to go into a church and kill two people. And thank God, I thank the Lord that there was a man there who was a head of security who was properly trained, who dropped the dude with one headshot. Now, you know, I'm ex-military, and you know, I've trained with weapons all of my life. But a headshot from 20 feet away, man, the guy was not only cool as a cucumber, but he was, God, I tell you, God directed that bullet because he put an end to the killing. It could have been terrible. He could have wound up killing, you know, dozens of people with what he had. So in that case, it was good that people, you know, were armed at the church. Now, the last thing I want to do is carry a gun into church, man. I don't want to do that. I don't want to have that frame of mind where, you know, I'm carrying a weapon into church. But I understand that for some people, that's how, you know, they have a sense of, you know, this is what I have to do to protect the people that I love. And if they're properly trained and they know what they're doing and they're sanctioned, then, you know, so be it. Good for them.
I think this is the part, and ultimately where I wanted to end with it today, is that I think there's a lot that we have in common. And the reality of it all is that what the country truly needs, and everyone keeps talking about, oh, we need to come together, we need to come together. The truth of the matter is this, is that it's impossible for us to come together as a country until we have truth and reconciliation, right? And anybody who's, if you're a fan of Dave Chappelle and you've watched some of his Netflix specials, what he said about South Africa was 100% true. The end of apartheid, by any stretch in any measure, should have been an absolute bloodbath. There's zero question it should have been. And the only reason it wasn't is because people sat down and understood that everyone was beholden to the system, and that if you benefited from it and you didn't necessarily want to, you were still a slave to the system, the same way if the system oppressed me.
But there was also a man who had been tortured and punished simply because he was a black man wanting freedom for his people. And when he was set free, he did not expound revenge. Instead, he forgave his enemies. He showed us the way. It was, my goodness, his name escapes me now.
That's what we need, Henry. That's what this country needs. This country, again, I love this country. I am a patriot in my own way.
I don't disagree with you.
You're right. Henry and I, we actually agree on more than we disagree. You should see the stuff we actually agree on. It's fascinating, okay? But truth and reconciliation in this country, people need to come and understand how if you're a person of European descent, you need to understand how this system has benefited you in the long run. It does not mean that, you know, people want to knock you off your spot. It's just people want you to acknowledge, like, hey, look, the system has been tilted towards me, right? People want to know, hey, if you're a person of color in this country, how has the system benefited you? Because there are some benefits to being a person of color. And at the end of the day, it comes up to unless we all sit down at a table and understand how everyone has benefited and how everyone has lost in their own fair share of ways, there's no way we can move forward together as a people. Henry, as always, I appreciate the time. God bless America. And remember, vote blue.
All right, brother. Thank you so much. I really appreciate that. You know, listening to Marcus speak, realizing that there's a heck of a lot more that unites us and divides us, makes me feel so very good. And when I feel good, I always play John Philip Sousa. For those of you who don't know, I went to elementary school in New York City. I went to PS 332, also known as John Philip Sousa Elementary School. Interesting that John Philip Sousa Elementary School was right smack dab in the middle of probably the worst ghetto that New York has ever had. Now, that area has become gentrified, and the properties that could be had for $10,000, now you can't touch them for $1 million. But even though I was a minority kid in a minority district surrounded by other minorities, I had the unique pleasure of listening to John Philip Sousa marches every week during school convocations. It gave me an appreciation for marching music, and I think probably in a way kind of prepared me for my military career, because one of the things that I loved when I was in the military, I loved parades. And even now, I still love parades. I love to watch parades. I love to march in parades. And I especially love the music of parades. I wanted to transition here very quickly. And before the hour is up, I did want to play a segment that I feel is very, very important. Yesterday, many of us took pause and celebrated the life and the career and the struggles and the sacrifices and the ultimate sacrifice of a great man, of Dr. Martin Luther King. Dr. King was not a perfect man. He was not a saint. But he was a man with a vision. And I want to share with you one of his most famous speeches. And so before the commercial break, at the top of the hour, I present to you the I Have a Dream speech by the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King. May God bless America. You're listening to America in the Now with your host, Henry Roman. For those of you who are less than 40 years old, this used to be one of the unofficial protest songs of the civil rights movement in the 1960s. My friends, I am not one of these knee-jerk conservatives who will say things simply for the shock value that it provides. I acknowledge that people on the left are just as patriotic as I am. I think they're misdirected. I think they got the priorities wrong. But I have no doubt that they are patriots. I think sometimes when they think of patriotism, their ideas of patriotism are very different than mine. I am a nationalist, and I've been accused of being a white nationalist, but unfortunately, the moniker doesn't stick because I'm not white. But I have, and I share the same ideals that my nationalist friends have, who happen to be white. I really don't like it when people stick monikers or stick labels on people that they don't agree with simply because, you know, they don't agree with them. I don't think it's fair. I am the product of my upbringing. I'm the product of my education. I'm a kid that was raised in inner city Brooklyn. So there are many issues I'm going to see through kind of racial lenses. It is what it is. But at the same time, I had an education that was superior than what people are receiving these days. My education, really, I'm a Renaissance man because from the time I started grade school, my teachers instilled in me a love for learning and culture that transcended race, that transcended ideology. And so you got some Puerto Rican kid from the hood who loves John Philip Sousa. Go figure. A kid that went to the University of Virginia in Charlottesville, a place where when people think of Charlottesville, they think of, you know, racists. Funny, but when I think of Charlottesville, I think of a place where I was challenged and I was forced to defend my ideology. And I'd better be good at it, too. It's a place that has its own history and its own issues, but it's also a city that is having its own growing pains. Not a bad place. It's a lovely place. Great place to raise children. There was an article that I was reading, and I'd like to share it with the audience. It's I receive a publication on a monthly basis from Hillsdale College. I love that college. Not only do I admire them, but I also... They're one of the charities that I support. I believe in their mission, therefore I put my money where my mouth is with them. And in return for my very minor support, because it's not that much. It's a lot to me, but probably, you know, as far as they're concerned, it's not very much. Who knows, one day if I become wealthy, I can, you know, give them a more substantial amount. But every month they send me a newsletter, and I find it very interesting, and I like to read it. And sometimes I will share it with you, and so that's what I'm going to do. This was from, let's see, when was this delivered to me? It was a November 2019 issue, a volume 48, number 11. And it comes from Imprimis, which is the newsletter from Hillsdale College. It says, American citizenship is eroding. It's by Victor Davis Hanson. It's in a abridged version of a talk delivered at Hillsdale College. So this wasn't an article that was written. It was actually an article that was spoken. But it says, today many condemn the idea of nationalism by connecting it to race hatred, i.e. white nationalism. But historically, the modern nation state has proven uniquely suitable to preserving individual rights. The American nation in particular was successful in uniting individuals of different races, ethnic backgrounds, and creeds into one people based on shared principles, a unique physical space, and a common national story. Our nation is the best example in human history of positive nationalism. I agree 100%. The key to this benign nationalism is American citizenship, based on an understanding of American exceptionalism and formed by the American melting pot. But today, our citizenship is eroding, and along with it, American nationalism, in the positive sense, is disappearing. American citizenship is eroding in three ways. First, we are blurring the line between mere residents and citizens. We have between 45 to 50 million non-native-born residents in the U.S. today. It's the largest absolute number we've ever had. There's no legal problem with the 30 million of them who have green cards or who have acquired citizenship, although even 30 million is a challenge for the American melting pot to assimilate and integrate. I also agree. But we also have, according to a recent Yale and MIT study, about 20 million people who are here illegally. In regards to them, the classical ingredients of American citizenship, i.e. the right to leave or enter the country as one pleases, for example, or to vote in elections or to reside here as long as one pleases, are being blurred. Where I live in California, if you're here illegally, you can de facto go back and forth across the border as you wish. In San Francisco, you can vote in some school board elections. The same is under consideration in some places in New England, God forbid. And as we see with the DACA program, illegal residents can de facto live in the U.S. indefinitely. Some policies even discriminate against citizens. An illegal resident in California who is charged with a crime is not subject to federal immigration law to the full extent, whereas a citizen who flies into Los Angeles from overseas without a passport will be detained. If you're in California as an illegal resident, you can obtain a driver's license, as citizens have in the past. Whereas for citizens, starting next year, there will be an extra burden. To travel by commercial air, they will have to provide at least 3 sources of proof of citizenship in order to obtain a valid ID. People who come to the U.S. illegally and in great numbers usually do not have the degree of investment citizens do in our constitutional documents and are often unacquainted with our national story. I agree again. Candidates from south of the border today fly into California Central Valley to campaign. Illegal residents vote in their home country's elections and yet are unaccustomed with political issues and candidates here in the U.S. To avoid a fragmentation of society based on racial and ethnic chauvinism takes an extra effort to keep the melting pot working. We're no longer making that effort. Indeed, we're doing the opposite, encouraging diversity rather than unity. And that stinks. Second, we're becoming a country of tribes. The idea of multiracialism, the notion that we're of different races but we share a common culture, is eroding. At many colleges and universities today, you can choose in advance the racial background of your roommate. Give me a break. When I was in college, my roommate was this little 17-year-old white guy, and I was a 24-year-old veteran. The two guys in the room next door, one of them was a Palestinian, and the other guy was Jewish. In another room, one guy was a white nationalist. Really, he was a good old boy from the South, a racist. His roommate was black. And you know what? We all got along. We all got past our differences. We all figured out how to live together, and we enjoyed each other's company. And the experience of living together changed us. Anyway, back to the article here. At many colleges and universities today, you can choose in advance the racial background of your roommate. I already said that. Campuses have safe spaces that are reserved for people of particular races. Give me a frickin' break. There are dorms where students segregate according to race. Nonsense. Ethnic studies departments thrive by emphasizing racial exceptionalism. Hello, you on the air? This is Henry with America in the Now. What's your first name? Oh, I can barely hear you. One moment. What's your name again?
Mark Anthony.
Mark Anthony. Talk a little louder, first of all, and welcome. It's good to hear your voice. I was just reading an article from Hillsdale College talking about American citizenship, about how it's eroding. If you could, bear with me. I want to read a little bit more, and I'd love to turn over to you, and I'd love to hear your perspective. But here's what I was reading. It says, at many colleges and universities today, you can choose in advance the racial background of your roommate. Campuses have safe spaces that are reserved for people of particular races. There are dorms where students segregate according to race. Ethnic studies departments thrive by emphasizing racial exceptionalism. Do we wonder why Elizabeth Warren chose to be a Native American, which, according to her own logic, the power of white privilege and systemic racism would put her at a disadvantage? The answer is that she sought a careerist advantage, and Harvard was happy to comply. The law school bragged that she was its first woman of color faculty member. And the person says, I went to a grammar school that was about 90% Mexican American. Some people who I went to first grade with later changed their names from Juan to John, and drop the accent on their last names. I would be one of those. Now in their 60s, they're changing back to Juan and adding back the accents. Why? Because there is now a disadvantage in identifying as an unhyphenated American and an advantage to belonging to a tribe. And the danger of this logic of tribalism leads to the kind of social breakup and civil discord that we saw in Rwanda, the former Yugoslavia, and Iraq. Third, the middle class, which had been encouraged and celebrated since the time of the American founding, is now under sustained attack. A solid, property-owning middle class anchors the nation. Traditionally, its members show the sobriety and judgment to achieve autonomy. They don't look to government for help. They stand as a barrier against both property redistribution and crony capitalism. Today, middle class, American middle class is threatened. Home ownership is down to about 62% from 71% just 10 years ago. The percentage of a family budget that goes to housing has risen from 20 to 30% in the 1950s to 30 to 40% today, especially in coastal corridors. Middle class wages, until an annual increase of 3% under President Trump, has been frozen for 10 years. And we have an aggregate $1.6 trillion in student debt. If the middle class continues to erode, we will become a nation of peasants and oligarchs. In California, more than 1 out of 5 people live below the poverty line, despite the fact that California has one of the highest numbers of zip codes of America's most affluent people and the highest number of billionaires. I mean, and it goes on.
Yeah.
I couldn't agree with this article more. The last paragraph says, in response, we need to support colleges that continue to teach the principles and practices of liberty. We must support policies that recognize the distinction between citizens and non-citizens and that bolster the middle class. And we need to defend the Constitution, our last great hope to ensure American continuity and security. Man, it has been weeks since you and I've spoken, Mark Anthony. First of all, how have you been, my man?
Well, I've been pretty good. I went and spent the holidays down in Jacksonville. And had a great time there. And now I'm back in Atlanta, and it's freezing cold up here. And I know it's like freezing cold here is like, you know, like a warm September day for you guys up there in Massachusetts.
And Mark, hey, I got to go to break. I get in trouble when I'm five minutes past my break. Please stay on for the break, and we'll continue with this. You're listening to America in the Now with your host, Henry Roman. I'm so glad that that you're on the phone. Just previous to you calling, I had played the Martin Luther King speech, "I Have a Dream," and then I started playing some Otis Redding, "A Change Is Going to Come." And I informed the audience that if they're probably younger than 40, they may or may not know the song, but it was kind of the unofficial protest song of civil rights, and it has great meaning. It's a beautiful song as well. So that's kind of where I was, and then I segued to this article about. About American exceptionalism and, you know, what's the difference between being an American and not being, and kind of the hazards that we have with having people that really have no allegiance to this country except, you know, to garner a paycheck and other things. So kind of here we are. I apologize for having to go to a commercial break, but you were telling me about kind of your days, your holidays. Tell me more, please.
Oh, no. I mean, it was just really nice being down in going back and seeing Florida. I kind of float between Atlanta and Gainesville, and it was just real nice being down there in the fun and the sun again. And the further you go north, the colder it gets.
From what I understand, in Florida, the further north you go, the further south you are.
I mean, one of the weirdest things is that I've lived in Florida probably about 15 years of my life, and it's crazy how I've never been to the Keys or I've never been to the Panhandle.
Oh, wow. No kidding. I got you beat there because I have been to the Keys. I haven't been to the Panhandle yet, though. So we are eager to know what your thoughts are about kind of the events that are going on. Day one of right now it's still going on. Day one of the impeachment hearings in the Senate. What are your thoughts about kind of this whole process, Mark Anthony?
I mean, I can't believe you actually said the word process because there seems to not be.
I use that term loosely.
I'm sorry. If you have any respect for what's going on right now, I have to really get you to question your intelligence and your values.
just, I mean, and what's annoying me the most is how the Democrats and the media keep jump roping between whether this is a political or it's a judicial process. If it's a political process, just like our elections and mudslinging, there's no rules. In a judicial process, the reason why we have due process, one of the founding reasons this country was started, was so that every citizen, and even non-citizens in America, is owed a fair process. If you think what they're doing here with Trump is a fair process, you're out of your mind. First and foremost, I mean, I hate how the Democrats love to delete the parts of the Constitution that doesn't fit their narrative. It says the president can be impeached for bribery, treason, high crimes, and misdemeanors. Now, here's what your readers need to understand. It doesn't say the House has the power to impeach. That means they can impeach for anything. The fact that it got specific and said high crimes and misdemeanors, treason and bribery especially, is a limiting principle. And the reason why you have that limiting principle is because with a crime, in our system, the prosecution has to prove elements.
But, you know, I just wanted to interject here with a comment. You know, it's one thing for me to hear you speak. Obviously, your logic is always flawless. But when I hear people like Shifty Shift speak, it's as if Trump has sacrificed, you know, a newborn baby to Moloch. Actually, he probably would prefer that. But it seems like that Trump has committed this unforgivable crime that he is compelled to remove him from office. How the heck, Mark Anthony? How the heck did we get to this point where you have, you know, two political parties that their realities are diametrically opposed? Yeah, and here we are. Most of us are stuck in the middle. And quite frankly, you know, I follow this, but I'm confused.
Exactly. And here's the more interesting thing. And I have to put this out there for all your listeners. You need to watch the PBS special that has just come out called A Nation Divided. It is one of the greatest documentaries for the present moment that you will ever see. They have Frank Luntz. They have Ann Coulter. They have them for hour-long unscripted interviews. And what they reveal is so telling. And I have to say this, Henry, I've seen nothing in the last 4 years that has sort of made me question Trump and maybe question his agendas. I know we keep getting blinded by the numbers and the media and the economy's doing better. Just because things are looking better doesn't mean they're going on so well behind the scenes. And this will kind of, this let me know that, okay, yeah, you're kind of falling for the glitz and glamour. We need to be more critical on Trump as far as substance. That woke me up to that.
But does it warrant removal from office? Does it warrant the negation of 63 million votes in 2016?
And that's something I was getting to. After watching that, one huge thing, especially Ann Coulter rips Trump apart. Ann Coulter rips Trump apart. But here's why you will stand there encapsulated. It is logical criticism that is so right on. And the one thing that went through my mind after watching that hour-long interview, I was like, if the Democrats had done absolutely nothing, they would be competitive in 2020. If they would have gone in and just basically, literally done their job, or actually fulfilled their campaign promises, this would actually be, we would be right now in America in an intelligent debate about the direction of this country. but we're not. And it's because of Adam Schiff and Nancy Pelosi and this horrific leadership on the Democrat side. And obstruction of Congress, they have basically impeached him for doing his job. We have separation of powers. If you say obstruction of Congress, you're basically saying he committed a constitutional crime by doing his job.
Mark Anthony, I'm going to have to get back with you. Hold on, because I got a couple more slots I need to get through so I can be caught up. And and then we've got, you know, we'll have like about 15 minutes or so before I get hit up again with commercials. We'll be right back. You're listening to America in the Now with your host, Henry Roman. Usually after 6 o'clock, I go a little bit, actually, I go a lot Motown. we're on with Mark Anthony, who's a frequent guest. I like to call him our resident constitutional scholar. You're bringing some stuff up now that's distressing me a little bit, I will say this, because I have heard about this segment, and I know about Ann Coulter. I know that she's not a supporter of the president. But, you know, there are a couple of things about Ann that I don't like. Ann has this kind of, in my opinion, she has this black or white thinking when it comes to the Dreamers. I'm going to say something that you may or may not agree with. But I do believe that a certain subset of Dreamers should be given a path to citizenship. They should be given the opportunity to earn their citizenship, not given. The Democrats want to basically, with a stroke of the pen, you know, extend, almoni domini, extend citizenship to 20, 30, 40 million people who do not deserve the privilege and the honor to be Americans. But there are kids that were brought up in this country who speak English just as good as I do, who really have no memory of their home nations. This is a country that they were raised in, and this is a country that they love. I mean, in some ways, they've become little social justice warriors, but I believe that they can be reprogrammed. Her belief is that they should all be deported, that, you know, they were here illegally, so black and white, you know, they need to leave. I think that's cruel, and I think that is something that we do ourselves a disservice by basically kicking out a bunch of people who are in many ways Americans, you know, in every aspect that I can consider, you know, people to be Americans, except for their legal status. I believe that they should be given the opportunity to earn their citizenship, and it should not be easy. I will tell you that. Just like the Japanese, when the Japanese during the internment times in the 1940s, when their families were interned, the Japanese fighting men and women volunteered, and with their lives, they showed themselves worthy to be American citizenships. And afterwards, there was never a question about, you know, where their loyalties lay. And I think, you know, I would love to see something like that as well, because, again, when like I, as you know, as someone of Latino extraction, I think there are some people that, you know, will ask me, oh, were you born here? Are you an American citizen? Were you given citizenship? You know, I hate those kinds of questions. I know where they're coming from. Anyway, I didn't mean to kind of segue away or take away kind of the legitimacy of what you're saying. But, you know, look, good presidents make bad saints. Donald Trump was a compromise. You know, he is not everything I had hoped for in a president, but doggone it, man, he does a heck of a lot of things that I hired him to do a certain job, and as far as I can see, he's doing the job that I hired him to do.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, you have to give, honestly, you have to look at his entire report card. You can't just focus on a one issue topic. What he's done on trade, he will go down as one of the greatest presidents ever. If you just judge him on trade, he's going down as one of the greatest. I mean, that alone, he deserves two terms.
One of my friends actually agreed with us today. You know, he's a left of center, and he actually said that NAFTA was actually one of his great accomplishments.
Yeah. I mean, you're supposed to say the U.S. MCA, that's what you're supposed to say now. But
sorry.
Yeah, honestly, it's beautiful because, I mean, and what people don't understand is what Trump has been doing on trade is changing the world, because I really think that Theresa May would have gotten that little weak Brexit deal through if she wasn't being held in juxtaposition to Trump, and how everyone saw that the things that everyone said that was impossible for him to get, he got on trade. because he was willing to go there. And honestly, Trump can kind of really do no wrong for the next 4 years for me. But on this topic, she was giving valid criticism in two things. Number one, I love the fact that I love the fact that Ann Coulter is so black and white, because in my opinion, she is the Ayn Rand of my generation.
I'll give you that.
She's the person that took the logical standpoint, and she's not giving an inch. As far as the Dreamers go, I'm conflicted, but I'm conflicted for very different reasons. One of the problems I have with it is that, especially being African American and our community, I mean, I tell everyone that day when they did those ICE raids on those poultry plants and everything, and the CNN had their children out there. My daddy, I come home and my daddy's not home. He hasn't done anything wrong. On that very same day here in Atlanta, the DEA with the Georgia police did a massive drug sweep, and they got about 400 or 500 people. On the same exact day.
Same thing, but it wasn't broadcast, you're right.
No one cared about, I mean, my daddy's not a criminal. Technically, yes. And as far, I mean, these people have, I mean, I would be okay with a compromise on the Dreamers as long as we had an honest debate about it. But that's not going to happen. Because one of the things that you need to think about, okay, this is a huge thing that was exposed with the executive order Obama did. Okay, so if their only crime was being brought to the country illegally as a child, well, there needs to be a logical question. How were they functioning in the United States without breaking laws? I mean, how'd you get a job? You had to put in a fake Social Security number before the DREAM Act. That's document fraud. That's identity fraud. There is a bevy of crimes that actually hurt Americans in the commission of them being here illegally.
One of the points that I've made in the past, and it's gotten me in a lot of trouble with a lot of people that I know, because unfortunately, I do worship with people that are here illegally, and I also know that this, when you enter this country illegally, and you start your life in this country by cheating. Cheating is something that you it's difficult to get rid of, because you get that advantage from cheating, and you do another cheat here and another cheat there, and in Spanish it's called trampitas. Right, so you add a diminutive to the word, so it's a little cheat, you know. But the problem is, those little cheats add up, and before you know it, these people are cheating on their taxes, they're committing visa fraud, they're committing all income tax fraud. I mean, and because the basic premise under which they arrived here is one of dishonesty, you know, it's difficult for them to become, you know, these paradigms of virtue, and that's the problem that I have. And I've gotten in a lot of trouble for saying what I just said. But I will keep saying it, that I have a problem with illegal aliens. I have a big problem with people who jump in line. I do believe, you know, we have mechanisms in place to give people opportunities. We have a visa lottery. 50,000 visas are given to people every year from a drawing. It's like a lottery. It's literally a lottery. All you have to do is submit the paperwork, and you can be as poor as can be. And if you get that, you know, that magical lottery number, boom, you've just hit the jackpot. With all the attendant, you know, benefits that come from getting a U.S. visa. But I do have a problem with that. I also have a problem with having so many people that are, you know, that haven't been brought up in the system, that do insist on pressing 2 for Spanish. It leads, in my opinion, to the balkanization, where you have two tiers of people. You have a people that are dependent upon government, where government can rely on their votes, right, for their continuance. You get the establishment of a ruling class. You get these, you know, crumbs thrown to people to keep them happy. But you get a change this change in government. And then all of a sudden, you get, you know, for the law-abiding citizens, our rights and privileges slowly but surely get eroded away. That can lead to right now times are good, right? Financially times are good, but when the economy goes south, as inevitably it will, there's going to be backlash against people that others feel that are here illegally, and you know, I'm afraid there's going to be violence.
Exactly. And you know what's so interesting? I had a conversation like that recently with someone who, in the midst of this Brexit stuff, they were talking about how many applications there were going for, like, Irish citizenship and all these other things. And I asked her a question. I was like, wait, hold on a second. You have dual citizenship, right? Okay, yeah. So do you get to vote in both Ireland and the UK? She was like, yes. I was like, and you don't see the problem there. And she was like, what do you mean? I was like, here in America, I was literally in Orange County, Florida, when the president was deciding by less than 250 votes. You are playing with, as divisive as Brexit was. I was like, imagine if Brexit came down to the wire, where there was maybe a 1,000 votes that separated leave or stay. It's those times. It's when things get to the extremes. It's when everything that you neglected, everything that you weren't paying attention to when times were good, is going to come back to destroy things. And this is why you have to do things. I mean, I don't really have to tell you. Being a Christian is like, that's why you do things righteously. When you do things righteously, you're not looking over your shoulder. The hard times, the storms in life come, but when you do things righteously, you're not always looking over your shoulder. And to your point, here's the thing. Here is one of the things that has been the most poignant in this entire debate. You know whose voice we never hear from? Legal immigrants.
Who's that?
Legal immigrants. And you know what? I know thousands of people. I know plenty of people who are dreamers. You know who the people who are the most anti illegal immigration?
Legal immigrants. My wife is a legal immigrant. She's from the Philippines. And she is very much against illegal immigration. She has seen firsthand how that affects our little society here, how it distorts power plays and how it diverts, you know, valuable resources that we need to other endeavors that provide no real benefit to the community.
But the greatest sin that I think that is not talked about here, and it's something that should be extremely personal to African Americans. A lot of people don't. I mean, a lot of people might know about the infamous 3/5 clause in the Constitution. Because basically, it was a compromise when they were writing our Constitution. If congressional districts and electoral votes are based on population in a state, when you had slave states like Mississippi, Alabama, Georgia, South Carolina, where close to 30% of the population was slaves, if you wanted to disproportionately get your power, what do? You just import more slaves. So they came up with a compromise where a black person would be worth 3/5 of a vote when the census was counted, when they reapportioned our congressional power, which is how much power you have in the federal government every 10 years. Okay, so after the Civil War, they passed, there was a big, one of the ways that the southern states were sort of getting out of giving these people voting, blacks, free slaves voting rights, and even Native Americans, was they would say, oh, well, you're not a citizen. You're not technically a citizen of the United States. As a solution, they did the birthright citizenship. And they did that beautiful little within the jurisdiction of the United States.
Right, right. Okay. I want to continue this conversation. I've got another hard break I need to go to. So please stand by, stay on the line. You're on with, ladies and gentlemen, you are listening to Mark Anthony. It's always so very interesting to hear him speak. We'll be right back. You're listening to America in the Now with your host, Henry Roman. All right, we're back on the line with Mark Anthony. We're kind of a segueing here and there. We're going, talking about the trial. Then we moved on to citizenship. We talked about illegals. Let's try to transition back to this issue of kind of where Trump is, and kind of where his detractors, such as Ann Coulter, kind of want him to be. I mean, where's that at? Versus where basically conservative Americans such as myself want him to be. What kind of, where's the disjoint? Or is there one? Or kind of how much distance is there between kind of where like the Ann Coulters of the world want to be, whereas where we want to be, and where Trump is?
Ann Coulter is holding his feet to the fire, to his promises, because...
Okay, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much what it was. She was like, okay, if this is truly what you say, if this is truly how you want to fix that, and, I mean, and she kept bringing up the name Chris Kobach, that is who Trump should have put in. If he would have put him in as a director of Homeland Security, all of this would have been fixed. And she was pointing out that there's no need to pass any new laws. No. The president already has all the authority he needs already, I mean, in statute, to fix the problem, and he didn't. And, yeah, I mean, you have to have people holding people like Trump accountable to the promises they're made. I got to give Trump props. He's kept more promises than probably any politician I've ever seen in American history. But it's the important things. We have to stay vigilant, because if you don't stay on the politicians, and that's one of the biggest problems in America, we advocate too much, and then we don't force them to live up to their promises. And that's what we need to really focus on.
But don't you think this whole impeachment process nonsense has in some ways emasculated President Trump and has limited his... I mean, the fact that he's able to do the stuff that he does, I find it amazing. But in a way, I think that this process has also limited him, and I don't know if it's limited his effectiveness, but you know, you only have so many hours in the day, and if you dedicate a certain slice of time to defending yourself, then that time that you were going to use, you know, to forge new alliances, to get new trade deals, you just don't have that time.
To be honest with you, from what I've seen so far, it's like I think Trump is handling this the exact way he should. He's not ignoring it, but I doubt if it consumes any of it, because there's literally no way that he's going to get removed. And B, he didn't do anything wrong. If he had done something wrong, he wouldn't have released the transcript, because people don't know. That's what people need to understand. That's what they're not getting. The Democrats' plan, they thought that this call was their smoking gun, and the parallels to Nixon are just like shocking. What they were hoping they were going to do is start this impeachment inquiry. He refused to release the call. It would have gone through the courts, and they could have pounded their chest this whole time: what secrets is he keeping, yada 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 yada, and sowed seeds of discord for the next year. He released it, and they had already gone too far, and with AOC, the Talebs, the progressive wing, pushing them on that, they've been forced to stumble right through here and try to keep a straight face doing it. So, and two, they're trying to, you ever notice how all they're focusing on is the testimony of John Bolton?
They're hoping that he's going to save them.
Yeah. Yeah, really. You think a hardcore neocon? They're expecting him to flip on Trump as if Trump did something wrong. He didn't do anything wrong. We have literally all of the evidence. I don't think it even tracks with him. I think it's a bother to Mitch McConnell, because Mitch McConnell, he has to stand strong by Trump to please the Trump supporters, but also he has to do enough to give the people in the quote unquote moderate. I don't really see these moderate areas, because for you to accept this whole moderate issue, you would have to accept that there's people turning away from Trump, and there are people who are supporting the Democratic Party. I think all the evidence right now is kind of going to the opposite.
Well, yeah, I agree. Yeah,
I mean, they did better than expected in the Senate seat. I don't care about House races. House races are usually about who gets 400 to 500 more votes in the primary, and they're decided by 5,000 and 6,000 votes. When you go to a statewide election, that tells me what's going on in your state, because guess what? The presidency is 50 statewide elections. So, if they would have made a dent in the Senate, I would be a little worried. But no. I mean, and what happened with the Kavanaugh? I mean, you can put the Trump impeachment with the Kavanaugh circus. What happened? The Republicans didn't break ranks. The Democrats broke ranks, and they lost seats.
Thank goodness.
What do you think is going to happen this time?
Thank goodness.
No Democrats. Yeah.
I don't think there's going to be a breaking in ranks. Well, we have reached the end of our time. Mark Anthony, as always, it is always an absolute joy to speak with you. Please, let's agree to talk next week. Let's have an update as to kind of what's going on with the impeachment hearing. I'd love to hear, as you go through the news, I'd love to hear your perspective. And I know my listeners will as well. I get lots of comments on Facebook and afterwards, after you call in. So you've got a little bit of an audience down here, or I should say up here. Take care.
I greatly appreciate it.
Sure. Take care. God bless. And I'll speak with you hopefully next week.
Okay.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, that was Mark Anthony. I always enjoy speaking with him. He's always a great man to speak with. I love his perspective. He studies, he's thoughtful, he's learned, and he's insightful. And we need more of that in this country. Thank you so much for listening to America in the Now. It is the top of the hour. We are here every Tuesday from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. We're also online at wararadio.com. Please tell your friends about our show, whether you agree or disagree. I appreciate you listening to the show, and I look forward to the rest of the winter and our summer. So take care, God bless, and we'll see you next week.